Let Sing and Swing.
Evening visit with Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon in Manila.
And now we bring you Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowther, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines. Episode 12, Lovers and Gorillas. Previously on Forbidden Diary.
Well, what were you running for? Frustrated Don Juan?
Well, you don't have to run for office for that.
It is a strain on the sex instinct to be so near and yet so far.
Man, those gorillas are like ghosts. They ambush the Japs and disappear up the mountains. They're driving them crazy.
The rainy season has begun. The men say that it is fine weather for guerrilla activity.
And now, Episode 12.
August 21, 1942. Our men were certainly correct about rain encouraging guerrillas because they're now in Baguio, fighting the Japanese just as typhoon season peaks. Both are fierce and unpredictable. As much as we cheer Filipino and Igorot victories, we also dread the repercussions. As soon as there's an uptick, the road destroyed, Japanese soldiers killed, Kempeitai interrogations increase. Any guerrilla victory can cause further scrutiny and restrictions in camp, and most likely in Baguio, where Carl, Dr. Lee, and Nida live. Before typhoon season, Peg and I crossed paths with an Igorot boy during our hike up to where the men cut trees for firewood. We thought, this boy is the simplest, purest freedom, able to come and go on the paths of a hill. He smiled shyly, ready to pass by, but Peg, all out for adventure, beckoned him over. The boy squatted native fashion and told us that he was meeting one of our men to collect messages for native wives from their husbands in camp. He called news from America our side and reported that Roosevelt says not to be discouraged because the U.S. could retake the Philippines any time and would come like many birds. The boy is now in the guardhouse, caught for a third time carrying bundles of wood down the hill. His hands are handcuffed behind his back, and he's leaning forward on the chair as though it hurts to have them tied that way. August 25, 1942. The clothes sent by Nida are covered in drops of candle wax, showing that she has to get things out in the dark. What's going on in Baguio? I'll worry until her next package arrives because it's the only way to tell if she and her family are safe. During a break in the rain, I went briefly up the hill with the children. There, the mind opens out and releases the spirit to the mountains, and all the cobwebs and dust of the week are brushed away. Between trips, my new waitressing job has become a welcome diversion.
Well, that's great, Natalie.
I was surprised when May asked me to take over for Frankie.
Are you going to be able to pick up those trays? They look pretty heavy.
Oh, May said I could carry just one or two plates at a time.
My wife, the waitress.
Well, nothing like learning to be a waitress and charwoman in your 40s, huh?
How about learning how to clean tripe and use a saw in your 50s? Hey, did you read about the camp store in the newsletter?
I did. The committee finally took it over.
Arthur said Hayakawa had to do a little arm twisting.
Well, it's about time. The so-called owners were jacking up prices, and that privileged set doesn't need any more extras to rub everyone's noses in.
Well, the store's cash only now, so no more loan sharks and middlemen.
Well, good. Remember when they tried to sell bread for 25 centavos above cost and people refused to buy it?
Uh-huh.
And that poor woman who baked them wept when the loaves were just left to spoil.
Yeah, that was a real shame.
And all because someone wanted to make a profit. Is Beatty feeling any better?
Yeah, he's over the nausea.
You know, I can't imagine Beatty or June separated from us, especially at such an impressionable age.
Any regrets that we didn't go stateside when we could?
No, I'm content with our decision, even though it's added gray hairs and taken a tooth. August 28, 1942. Seeing people's resourcefulness always rejuvenates me. I visited Dr. Hall at the camp hospital, and he showed me some of the homemade medical equipment. He's particularly proud of a laboratory heater made from a coffee can, two spikes, a piece of bamboo, and an alcohol lamp. Dr. Hall's worried about the watercress from a nearby river.
I don't care what people say, Natalie. Boiling watercress isn't going to make it safe to eat. We've got two cases of river fever, and I'm concerned it might be the source.
Well, is our water safe? I see you're using a rain barrel.
The drinking water is safe, but not so great for sterilizing instruments. It leaves a powder, so we use rainwater for that and as a substitute for distilled water in sterile solutions.
Hmm.
Not having a microscope felt like I was missing my right arm.
Oh, but you have one now. With all of the diseases around here, Camp Holmes must be a pathologist's dream.
Well, I don't have to travel far to do research. Now, I've spent a lot of my career studying dysentery.
Well, what a magnificent opportunity this is for you.
It's been delightful.
Well, I'm glad someone's happy around here.
Did you see Daphne's posters around camp?
Mm-hmm. A specimen in time saves nine.
Clever bunch, aren't we? Take a look at this staining tray. It's a glass dish the shop found in a scrap heap. See, the slide in the center is supported by an inkwell.
Hmm. Is this what I think it is?
A prenatal incubator. It's made from a pasteboard box, an electric lamp suspended by a long cord, and a clinical thermometer. We regulate the temperature by lengthening or shortening the cord and watching the thermometer. Surgery's upstairs. Want to see it?
I would.
Well, here it is.
I'm impressed.
All things considered, we're pretty proud of it. A lot of things came from Notre Dame Hospital. You know, surgical tables and supplies.
What's this?
A steam autoclave to sterilize instruments. We still have to dry them in an oven. And that surgeon's headlights from a car headlight. We mend our rubber gloves with tire patches. Don't mind the chicken on the operating table.
Oh, isn't that bird supposed to be on Alex's operating table in the kitchen?
Finders keepers.
August 29, 1942. I'm drained and fed up with human beings. The constant furtiveness in camp, the low ebb of ethics, the shrugging shoulders, and the petty graft had me down for a few hours today. How they can all be so swell and so rotten within such a short space of time is incalculable, and I give up. I like them and despise them all at once, Jerry.
You can't hold everyone to your standards, Natalie.
That party the other night was in such poor taste. How could anyone serve those food trays next to parents who are struggling to feed their kids?
You know, we get some pretty good food from Nita.
Yes, but at least we have the decency to eat behind our hands or bent over the food. And we share!
Don't let a few rotten apples get you down. Look at the guys at the shop and all of the work they do for everyone.
Well, look at what happened to all of those cans of milk that you donated back in February for babies and children that went into people's coffee. There was enough for 3 months for the four of us. You were furious.
Well, I ain't gonna get all revved up about that anymore. It's not worth it.
And anyone who tries to make or follow the rules is the butt of wisecracks and criticism. Oh, it's so juvenile.
It's only a few people, Natalie.
But look at the effect it has. It's why most of the committee members won't enforce their own rules and say that nothing can be done. Oh.
Hey, I know. Let's take a walk when there's a break in the rain. Maybe up to that meadow?
I could use a walk.
The guards have been pretty lenient. They even let the boys play gorillas up on the hill today.
Oh, see, this is exactly what I mean by pushing the boundaries. If the guards find out what the boys are actually doing, that'll be the end of their play privileges. Have you been able to mend your glasses?
No, and it's really limiting what I can do. Next chance I get, I'll take him to the shop.
Oh, maybe you can take June's as well. She bumped into my shoulder and broke them in another place.
Again? This'll be the third time since we've been here.
September 20, 1942. This typhoon season has turned into the strongest one yet. A wild one, with all of us stuck in the barracks. These past days of non-stop rain feel like 10 years. I spent most of today under a blanket, trying to get warm. Our quiet hour was non-existent, with two school groups reading aloud in each corner, intoning Romeo and Juliet in young, monotonous voices. Younger children banged in and out, singing, stomping. Wet feet with every trip between barracks. And always, rain. September 22nd, 1942. It looks like the Japanese are preparing to battle the guerrillas here because another truckload of soldiers arrived today. During Japanese class, two of the new soldiers came running by the door with bayonets, almost cutting each other, and asked Miss McKim the way to the road. Ahead of them, more soldiers ran about with bayonets, breathing fast, looking every inch like they were defending their lives. The last thing we saw before sunset was a file of 20 Japanese soldiers climbing the rise in back of camp. The guards have been so antsy lately that the shortwave radio had to be dismantled, as it was nearer and nearer to being found. Until things calm down, there'll be no more authentics circulating word of mouth. September 23rd, 1942. Well, all is back to normal in camp, at least on the surface. We went to Father Gowan's lecture about his various school experiences in the Philippine Mountains and China. He was witty and vigorous, so there were roars of laughter. Later, after a final cup of tea in the kitchen, I sent Jerry home to warmth and sleep, and then sat alone on the front bench. Upstairs, the rumor gang could be heard speculating why the Japanese are so jittery and complaining about how we now get plenty of attention after a period of none. The talk then shifted over to how life will be different after the war. September 24, 1942. At 9:15 p.m., there were shots beyond the hill. Later, a truck came down the curve and it may have been backfiring, but the lights were put out immediately in the guardhouse. We went to sleep to the tramp of hobnail boots patrolling our barrack. September 25, 1942. Rumors are floating about guerrilla supplies received by submarine, and that Filipinos are fleeing to the lowlands or trekking up the mountain trails with their belongings. Tensions are so high that the enemy issued more rules.
Camp Holmes Daily News. New camp rules by order of the Nipponese Guard. 1. The hillside is out of bound except for the wood crew. 2. Women are not allowed at the pig pen. 3. Everyone must be in their bunks after lights out at 9:30 p.m., except the kitchen crews and those using the bathrooms. 4. No loitering or smoking cigarettes behind the barracks or on the stairs. 5. Offenders will be punished.
September 28, 1942. The guards are no longer on high alert, but watchful and tense. Our morale is low because of the terrible weather and new restrictions. Poor Jerry has no appetite or pep. Looks thin, just pushes around, and has no hope of any American deliverance. Beatty is homesick, so we sat on the porch talking until he finally had a cry, which snapped the tension. This no-contact business is especially hard on the men whose families are living on the outside, and Beatty's surrounded by them in the men's barrack. Here. Blow. Feel better to get it off your chest?
Yeah, but I want to stay over here, Mom. The men are cross all the time and swear about everything.
It's just their way of blowing off steam, sweetie.
They don't have any time for us kids. They play poker all day and night. That's all they do.
Okay, what are we playing, guys? Spit in the ocean, take an hand high. Okay, how about no peaky baseball?
Nah, nothing fancy.
5-card stud for matchsticks.
Yeah, okay.
Phil, Larry, Hank, you guys in?
Yeah, okay.
What about you, Jim?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, I'm telling you, Larry, it's the gorillas. That's why Hayakawa's clamping down.
No kidding. Did you figure that out all by yourself, Joe?
Hayakawa's an idiot. He told Miss McKim the other day that Japan attacked Indiana.
So what?
Well, not the battleship, Larry. The state of Indiana. She told him it's in the center of the U.S., but Hayakawa just looked at her and said he knew that.
Moron. Yeah, I don't believe any of the news around here anymore. No offense, Jeff.
None taken.
Well, I bet we're stuck here for 2 years or more, trapped like insects in Lieutenant McKeebo's net.
Yeah, and listening to Curtis moon over his wife.
If he says one more time that their love grows like a flower, I'm gonna pop him one.
Can you believe that guy?
How's he gonna keep his little flower watered in this place?
Yeah, it's getting so bad that I had to learn the Japanese word for daughter, so the guards don't harass me when I'm talking to my own child.
Hayakawa's just following Lieutenant Makibo's orders.
Who put a bug up Makibo's wazoo anyway?
No one. He was born with it.
My wife says he's a bigoted, disappointed man.
She? And I just thought he was an SOB.
Hayakawa's sure been on that sergeant's back.
I don't think either of them gives a fat rat's ass about co-mingling. Before the new rules, they used to look the other way.
Nah, it's all cyclical. The Japanese will back off when the gorillas quiet down.
Looks like that won't be for a while. I got a message from the hillside post that a lot of artillery is being shipped to Manila.
You think Walter Cushing's behind it?
Wouldn't doubt it.
Man, I love that guy. If anyone's going to win this war, it's him.
Well, at least we're getting under the enemy's skin. That makes me happy.
Would make me happy, Crowder, is if you'd quit yapping and deal the cards.
September 30, 1942. We heard that Dr. Lee's husband died of malaria and malnutrition at Kabanatuan, where 2,000 officers are in prison camp, badly fed and in poor health. He never saw his new son. I'm still concerned about Jerry and visited Dr. Hall today. Well, Dr. Hall, that sure explains why we've all been so hungry.
Well, very simple. The committee runs out of money at the end of the month, so less food. I know that the committee has been hitting up Hayakawa, but he just squirms out of the discussion.
Poor June's got no pep at all.
We'll get more food at the beginning of the month.
Oh, Jerry's so gaunt and gray in the face.
I don't like to hear that. He's got to let us monitor his temperature. He knows he's got pulmonary problems. Are his ankles still swollen?
Yes, but the yeast has helped.
Well, he's vitamin B deficient, but he's not the only one around here.
His disposition is impossible, Doctor. I have 3 children on my hands. Since losing his glasses, he claims there's nothing to do but play poker. It's like a drug. He refuses to pick rice. Says that he's done enough for this damn camp and still burns over the canned milk he turned in last February. I thought he'd put that in the past. This is just not like him.
Well, I can't do much about his temperament, but have him come in and I'll take a look at him.
Thank you.
He'll snap out of it, Natalie. A dose of good news is the best medicine.
Yes, well, we all need inspiration and cheering, but sure aren't going to find any here.
How about Robbie, our miracle child? There's some inspiration for you. Have you seen him pushing himself in that little go-kart? He's learning to walk again.
God, what a place for a child to get encephalitis.
True. But he's fortunate. And I'm not just feeding you a line, Natalie. He really is. We have an excellent masseuse, and she's making Robbie use those legs. Frankly, I don't think the kid has a choice.
Maybe I should send her over to Jerry.
But he'll get no sympathy from her. How's that canker sore in your mouth?
Worse.
Well, let me take a look. Open. It's from the starchy diet. Are you still taking yeast pills?
Yes.
Gargling with salt water will help. Are your hands and arms still feeling numb?
Yes. It's about the same.
Well, let's see if this vitamin B extract works better for you than the yeast. We make it here by extracting it from rice hulls.
October 2nd, 1942. The rain continues. All of the windows are closed. It's stifling in this small room with 25 women and children. The sewing machine clatters and someone types while young girls play jackstones and read stories aloud. And the little ones roughhouse on the upper bunks. It's bedlam in here, but where are all of the small fries to go? October 6, 1942. Jerry told me that Walter Cushing was shot in a surprise attack while eating at the table, which must mean betrayal by a collaborator. The natives adore Cushing and his tireless efforts to do anything possible to obstruct enemy occupation. He was a torchbearer, keeping up Philippine morale during these difficult months of waiting for America. The enemy wrapped his body in banana leaves and laid it in a shallow grave. Hundreds braved the wrath of the Japanese to see his body. When he was buried, some stayed until the Japanese left, and then buried his body deeper so dogs couldn't dig it up. Just when we thought we couldn't get any more down in the dumps, a wonderful bag from Nita arrived with roast leg of goat, hearts of artichoke, a can of asparagus, jar of mayonnaise, 2 bags of lemons, and cigarettes. We had a feast at noon that cheered us up no end. Not only for the food, but knowing Nita must be okay despite the fighting. After Japanese class, there was a break in the weather, so we watched a noisy baseball game. The season officially starts when the weather clears, so the men and children practice when they get the chance. All of the guards joined the spectators to watch. Afterwards, 3 of the guards tried to learn how to arm wrestle with our bigger boys. October 16, 1942. The guerrillas have reached Camp Holmes. The turmoil started at 3:30 a.m. when everyone was awakened by gunshots. What was that?
I don't know.
Sounds like it came from the road below the barracks.
I don't see anything. There are some little pings coming from the hills.
Diane, those aren't pings. That's pistol fire.
Well, they certainly sounded like shots to me.
Everyone, get down, for heaven's sake.
Do you think it's guerrillas? You know, retribution for Cushing?
Now, how would I know that, Diane?
Can you see anything out of the window, Peg?
Looks like Miss McKim, Hayakawa, and some guards are heading over here.
Everyone, please. Mr. Hayako wants us to put on dark coats and go with the guards to the center barrack.
Here's your coat, June. Wait, hold on a sec. I need to get something. Where is it? Where is it?
Mommy, what are you doing?
Where is it? Oh my God, oh my God. Where is it?
What, Mommy?
Oh, here it is.
What?
Nothing, nothing, dear. We better head out. Panic hit for a moment when I thought I'd lost my diary. What a relief to have found it, under Maria's bed. We spent the rest of the night hunkered down in the center barrack. During the height of the shooting, while pouring into its unlighted upper story, we fell over a group relaxing in the aisle, and a young mother implored us not to wake her baby. Into the small hours, Hayakawa and the guards mixed with us behind the kitchen counter, drinking coffee. Hayakawa said that our morale was very good because we, quote, know the Japanese are friends. Miss McKim politely corrected him, saying, "No, Mr. Hayakawa, it's because we're Americans." But there is some justice to his conclusion. We returned to the women's barrack at 6:30 a.m., exhausted from traipsing around in the darkness with bullets whizzing through the air. I immediately tucked my diary safely away. These bits of paper from envelope flaps and book margins have become my most precious possession. I first wrap them in packets of raincoat scraps, then hide them inside a tall can and cover them with margarine. The can then goes inside an Igorot-woven bag with our food supplies. After last night, Camp Holmes now looks like a war scene. From our upper window, we saw another truck full of Japanese soldiers arrive. They divided into three parties, climbed up the hill along the ridge, and returned quickly. A second truck drove into camp with three Americans, who served chow for the soldiers. Rumors fly thick and fast while everyone waits. Hayakawa claims that Trinidad Bridge is out. October 17, 1942. There is said to be a battle going on down in the valley. We see it from the hospital and hear machine guns, pounders, and fighting, but it could be ruthless mopping up of a village. Thunder and guns. Which is which? We had both today. By second meal, we heard of landings and battle in Lingayen Gulf. While men fought and died in the valley within our sight, the flower arrangement class adjusted bouquets exquisitely on the porch, and our choir practiced. Insanity! And no word from Nita for well over a week. October 18, 1942. We continue to tack back and forth between wartime horrors and the ridiculous. While guerrilla battles continued nearby, Mattresses were seen going to the guardhouse. Word went around that a venturesome young married couple had been caught out of bounds and commingling. Major offenses at the moment. Hayakawa summoned Miss McKim to the guardhouse.
Honorable Aunt, Hayakawa wants to see you at the guardhouse right away.
どうしたんですか? What's going on?
A couple was coming, Ling, and the private wants them punished.
Who's there?
Hayakawa, the private, Arthur, and the couple and their parents.
Please help me understand. Why does the opinion of a private matter? Don't you and Hayakawa outrank him?
He's in the Imperial Japanese Army, and we are only civilians from Baguio.
おばさま、来ていただいてありがとうございます。Honorable Aunt, thank you for coming.
Hayakawa-san, どのようにお手伝いしたらいいですか? How may I help, Mr. Hayakawa?
彼女ですか? Is this her?
兵隊さんが気に入らないことが… The private is upset about…
囚人たちに刑務所に行くよう伝えてください。
What's he saying, Ms. McKim?
The private wants to take the couple to jail, Arthur.
Oh, come on! For holding hands?
手をつないでただけじゃないですか?
彼らは手をつなぐ以上のことをしていました。
He says they were doing more than holding hands, Arthur.
もしそうなら、ここにいる所長もそうするだろう。 He could do it too, if he could.
そんなことはありません。 Oh no, I'm sure not.
そうです、彼はそうするだろう。 Oh yes, he would.
別の罰を検討していただけませんか? 今回初めてなので。 Would you please consider another punishment? This is their first offense.
全てのルールに従わなければなりません。 All rules must be followed.
Then what happened after that?
Well, after several hours, the private finally agreed to a lighter punishment.
I sympathize with those kids. We'd all like to see our spouses.
I still don't understand how a private can lord over a prison commandant, even if he is in the regular army.
That's the pecking order, Natalie. The military has very high status in Japan, but I think it was more than that. Tensions are high because the Japanese are petrified about what the guerrillas might do to them. Anyway, I'm just grateful that the private finally settled for a night in the guardhouse as punishment.
Wait, both of them? Together?
Well, yes and no. They have to sleep with a guard between them.
Romances flourish the only way they can in concentration. Stilted, public, leading to no actual courtship, but tender devotion in conversation and looks. Before the crackdown, food preparation ended in twosome parties under pine trees or iron-roofed runways. One hears all kinds of strange information in this camp. I was told seriously that at least 4 or 5 individuals here have 3 or 4 wives in various sections. But not all in one spot, of course. October 22nd, 1942. There's almost an ominous silence as trenches are dug around camp with a feeling of waiting for something. Camp is so different from 3 months ago. The guards are doubled, now 18, and they feel better about it. Because there aren't enough pots in the guardhouse, they bring rice to be cooked with ours in the kitchen. God help them. The guards get less food than we do, so their meat is supplied from our beef. They ask for and get enough meat for 18 individuals, which is reasonable. But what we feed 64 people. I spent the morning with a hot water bottle on my swollen face, nursing an abscessed tooth, and viewing funeral services out my window for Mr. Polson, who died after surgery for appendix adhesions attached to his kidney. The memorial service brought sorrow and death very near. The choir sang, and Mr. Roberts' eulogy floated down past a long file of people who ranged the length of the mesa-like bank of the hill. Mrs. Polson wore Aurora Kazon's black dress. October 23rd, 1942. A bag finally arrived from Nita. We haven't heard from her in nearly 2.5 weeks. Oh, thank God, she and her family are okay. She sent laundry and Lysar soap, 1 kilo of coffee, 1 bag of cakes, 1 kilo of sugar, 1 bag of tomatoes, and 1 bunch of bananas. How do they manage to pay for it? And how can we ever repay them? October 27, 1942. The guerrilla activity has lessened these past few days, and somehow life seems to be back to the way it was. But for how long, we all ask. In the meantime, everyone is angry about something. The committee is having a hard time placing the newly arrived Catholic sisters into new living quarters. Spaces have been measured, meetings held, everyone dissatisfied, and the sisters are, well, miffed. One sister declared at a committee meeting,
"Every place has been suggested for us but the pig pen, so I guess we're not good enough for even that."
The last suggestion was the barber shop, which may be it for the sisters. Even the guards were perturbed. Evidently, a couple of small children stopped going down to the guardhouse to see them because parents are tired of going after them. But visits are on again, and the guards are happy. And Jerry is feeling better and working hard for us. Today he got me some of the hottest bathwater I can remember in camp. It was wonderful. I put up my big towel as a curtain and took my time. Jerry now spends hours on tripe preparation, one of the ways he shows affection, which is limited in this camp.
This concludes episode 12. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowder, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines.